Hey, this is Dr. Chris Levens, your four-eyed professor, and thanks for getting on the podcast today. Today, the title is Making the Invisible Visible. And I have a couple of guests, Dr. Stephen Ferrucci from the Sepulveda VA out in California, and Dr. Jessica Haynes from Charles Retina Institute in Memphis, Tennessee. And the main focus is to talk about what is really big news these days, which is geographic atrophy. And the earliest diagnosis, as with a lot of things, is the most critical thing to do. So quality scans to really identify the proper layers of the retina which can be affected are really crucial, because the numbers are staggering, with over approximately a million people in the U.S. losing vision from this condition, which goes incredibly fast, with inability to drive in less than 2 years and blindness in the better seeing eye in approximately 6 years. This is just a really big deal. So we're gonna start talking about quality images in partnership with Heidelberg Engineering, and then we're gonna pivot into some really important details with your patient analyses for identification of geographic atrophy. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you really like it.
This is a Defocus Media production.
Hey everybody, I'm your four-eyed professor, Chris Levens, and I'm super excited to talk to you today. Our roll call is for new and experienced ODs, optometry students, and even those just interested in this profession. We'll cover a number of topics together, and I'll help you see them through a professor's eyes. Please take your seats. School's in session. I'm just going to throw a big softball out, and that is, why is a condition, geographic atrophy, or GA, such a hot topic right now?
I don't know, Chris. I've never heard of this disease before.
Well, a few years ago, neither had the rest of us.
Oh, yeah. You know, as everyone kind of knows right now, we have a new treatment for geographic atrophy. So that, it's like you said, you know, for so long, it was kind of the ignored subject, and we didn't think a lot about it. We didn't hear a lot of lectures about it. And now there is a treatment for it, and you know, we're getting so much information that's coming out about this condition, things that we didn't know about it before. So it is a very exciting time in the world of dry AMD.
Yeah, I agree 100%. When you said curveball, I thought you were going to ask me like anterior segment. I was going to have to hint on that, or contact lens or something. But Jessica's right, right? There's one new medication recently, FDA approved Syfovre by Apellis. There's another one probably by the end of the summer will probably be FDA approved, is the general consensus in the retina world. It's called Zimura by Iveric. You know, and these, they don't reverse AMD, but they help slow down progression growth. So, you know, once you get a geographic atrophy lesion, these lesions are going to grow over time, coalesce if you have a couple smaller ones into a bigger one, cause more functional loss, and eventually lead to decreased visual acuity. So these are intravitreal agents that can slow down the progression and hopefully let our patients function better, more independently for a longer period of time. And I do think up until this point, we haven't really cared, like Jessica said, about GA because we couldn't treat it. But now that we have a treatment, we've got to start recognizing it. We've got to start looking for it. And then eventually figuring out which are the best and most appropriate patients for treatment.
So I'm going to say this next statement over simplicity, purposefully. Some time ago, we used to think that dry AMD was the good type. That's not exactly true. And so how were we so confused? Was it just the fact that we didn't have a mechanism to treat, so it was a convenient thing to overlook? Was it the fact that we didn't have the technology to identify one from another? Or were we misconstruing these as wet because the patients were worsening, even though we didn't see vessel growth? Or what was the reason?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that is because for so long we didn't have treatments for exudative AMD either. And for a long time, exudative AMD was the number one cause of vision loss in patients who had macular degeneration. But then as you develop these treatment options for exudative AMD, those patients, although not all of them are going to see excellent, obviously we still have patients that we're identifying too late, they already have significant macular scarring, We still have patients that may lose vision over time, but we're able to treat these patients and ultimately do much better with them than we used to. But I think that that is, like I said, a very just old thinking from the time even before we had anti-VEGF injections to treat exudative AMD.
Yeah, I try to explain to my patients, you know, it's dry and there's wet. I don't like the category good and bad because, you know, we used to, like you said, think dry is good, wet is bad. But I've had patients say, oh, I wish I had wet because there's a treatment for it. And I'm like, well, you kind of don't, because you do tend to have more serious vision loss more quickly if you have wet. So, you know, it's kind of depends how you look at it. But when they ask, oh, do I have the good kind or the bad kind? I go, well, neither kind is good nor bad. They're just different. And right. This is what you have, and this is what we need to do. So I hesitate to use that terminology with my patients, good, bad. You know, patients say, oh, that's my bad eye. It's not your eye's fault. It didn't mean to be bad, right? So I tend to try to, you know, not use those terminology because it's confusing, I think.
Yeah, I think that's good advice that we should all follow, actually. Yeah. But a lot of times patients have heard these phrases before they even meet you. Mm-hmm.
Of course.
All right. So when employing state-of-the-art OCT technology for either diagnosing or monitoring the progression of geographic atrophy, what types of things are you looking for? And could an inferior or poor quality scan confound you in this disease state?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, you're looking for subtle things. So you can see traces of subretinal fluid in patients who have exudative AMD that you can't see clinically, intraretinal fluid that you can't see clinically. In terms of identifying patients with geographic atrophy or even perhaps patients who may be at more risk, you know, to develop geographic atrophy, there are a lot of markers on the OCT that you may see. There's so much talk now about reticular pseudodrusen, which are actually more subtle form of drusen. They're not these large soft drusen that we know of to be this increased risk of developing advanced disease. They're these tiny little projections that sit on top of the RPE and kind of stick up. You know, looking for those types of things is important because patients with reticular pseudodrusen, for example, have increased risk to develop GA, and they also tend to have worse visual function. So they're the people that come in and say, I can't see to drive at night, I can't read my phone, I can't do all these things, I see 20/20. And we don't want to be telling people things like, oh, I don't know why you don't see well, you just have a little bit of macular degeneration, when they have a variant of macular degeneration that's actually more likely to develop advanced stage disease. So it's extremely important to have the quality scan that you need to be able to see these subtle changes.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And really, one of the most, I think, recognizable and easiest things to look when you have frank geographic atrophy is what they call a transmission defects, right? Some people call it transmittance or transmission, right? So you're going to have a loss of the RPE because we have geographic atrophy. So we're losing the layers, we're going to lose the RPE. So the light is going to penetrate more in that area. So you're going to see the light penetrating more underneath a geographic atrophy lesion. So to me, that's probably the easiest thing to look for, you know, when you have frank geographic atrophy. All the things Jessica say lead up to that point and can be used in conjunction. But that transmittance is really, in my mind, the first, you know, clinical sign, if you will, of frank geographic atrophy. The other thing I think is important to look at is the non-IR or the ONFOS image as well. Right. Because the ONFOS image, really, you can see the lesions quite nicely on the ONFOS image, and you can really look at those GA lesions and see if they're growing over time, which I think is probably a more accurate way to see growth than perhaps looking at the B scan of the OCT. And those, you know, you have to have a good quality OCT to look for these things.
Yeah, that's such a good point, Steve. And, you know, the Heidelberg really, I think, is one of the few instruments that has an extremely usable ONFOS image that's associated with the B scan. So that near infrared reflectance image that's associated with the OCT cross-section scan, it is extremely helpful because you can also see these lesions like reticular pseudodrusen on that as well. And you can see that change in the GA over time. With the Heidelberg too, you have such good progression software to be able to flip back and forth between the scans. So even today I had a patient with GA I've been seeing since 2020, and you can go back through those scans and show the patient, because the GA will be hyper-reflective on the near-infrared reflectance image. This is how it grows, and it grows every single time you come in. You know, today is worse than it was 6 months ago. You know, it was worse than a year ago, et cetera. So that's very helpful for patient education too.
Yeah, no, you bring up a good point. I mean, you know, with the fact that we can scan now so fast and we have such good images, you know, you can compare images over time much, much better than we could, you know, 100 years ago when we first got our first, you know, OCT. So it is a good way to track for progression and look for subtle changes that might not be as obvious.
All right, I'm going to throw out some facts about GA. Let me know which one of these, or if there's multiple, that's okay, is most impactful to you. And grabs people's attention. The fact that approximately 5 million people in the world have this GA condition, 1 million in the US, that it's responsible for one legal blindness cases, the prevalence quadruples every 10 years, quadruples starting at age 50.
You know, I think that quadruples past age 50 catches my attention for some reason. Because as we know, this is a disease of aging, but just to think about how much your risk is going to go up. And as we see these guys, you know, even whenever they truly have early stage disease, if that patient's 55, 65, you're thinking about, where's this person going to end up? And, you know, being able to do everything you can to try to decrease these modifiable risk factors for that patient just as much as possible. And, you know, hopefully we have further treatments for this stuff in the future too. But that's an interesting fact there.
Yeah, I think they're all pretty eye-opening. You know, the fact, I guess the one that strikes me is probably like a million Americans have geographic atrophy, right? I practice in America, so I guess it doesn't matter what happens, you know, elsewhere to me personally, because I'm practicing here. But, you know, that's a lot of people. That's a little bit more probably than actually have wet macular degeneration, right? Almost as many go wet as go to advanced dry, i.e. geographic atrophy. So there's a lot of patients. And I would argue that number of a million is probably underreported, because we haven't really cared. So we just lump it under dry AMD. And then I would say, being a million in the United States, there's no way there's only 5 million in the world, right? There's got to be way more than 5 million in the world if we have a million in the United States, just by sheer numbers, right? So I think that number, 5 million in the world, is, I think 1 million in the United States is probably an underestimate, but I think 5 million worldwide is a super grossly underestimate.
Yeah, they're just out there and haven't been specifically diagnosed yet. All they know is they can't see.
Right, correct.
Well, we know AMD in general is underdiagnosed, and I'm certain that, you know, geographic atrophy and those with AMD is underdiagnosed too.
Let me ask you next, just approximately, what is the rate of progression of geographic atrophy? And I'm already under the impression that it's fast. Why is it so fast?
Yeah, that's a good question, Chris. And it's faster than we realized, I think. So, you know, for these patients, for so long with dry AMD, we tell them, oh, dry AMD is slow, you know, it moves very slow. But as you go through these levels from, you know, early to intermediate to advanced stages of even dry AMD, you know, things begin to move faster. It may take a long time to go from no AMD to early or early to intermediate, but as you get into these realms of GA, it tends to move fast. And we're realizing that more, particularly with these clinical trials that are evaluating GA. And I believe the statistic now is that from onset of lesion, it's about 2 to 2.5 years before you would actually have vision loss from that. I mean, that's no time.
That's crazy fast.
Yeah. You know, one of the good things, I mean, a lot comes out of all these trials for geographic atrophy. And even before these medications were FDA approved, there's another medication that was hoping to get FDA approved that didn't work. But it really shined, I don't know, whatever, a light on geographic atrophy and really showed us, you know, that it's not a slowly progressive disease, that it actually does like Jessica said, you know, 2.5 years or something from first onset to foveal involvement. So it really does progress more quickly than I thought and probably most of us thought. So yeah, it just lets us know we can't sit on it for perhaps as long as we thought. And, you know, there's out of all this, and I think we'll be hearing more as these drugs start to do a little more education, I think we'll hear even more about some of these facts and figures and how quickly it really can affect your vision.
Let me ask you to then tie into the soft skills here. So in your interactions with patients with retinal disease, such as this, number one, how do you communicate to somebody that you see something in which there's a likelihood of vision loss in a very short period of time? How do you deliver that message, and how do you get the patients to fully comprehend this? And then two, do you show them your OCT images? Do you show them your spectralis images, or you just try to describe it to them? How do you deliver this news to your patient?
So I do show them their images, and the near infrared reflectance image, that on-foss image that's associated with the OCT cross-section scan, is really helpful for seeing that GA lesion. But also the fundus autofluorescence is extremely helpful, and probably more so helpful, makes a little bit more impact because you have these dark areas that you can describe to them as these blind spots in their vision. But a couple other notes. One thing, most of these patients with GA, once they get to this point, I mean, some of them are asymptomatic. Some of them are not struggling. A lot of them are. And in some way, whether that's night vision, contrast sensitivity, reading speeds, et cetera. And one thing I always do is I do validate their problems because they're not crazy. You know, people tell these guys for too long that, oh, you have good vision, you're 20/20, you should see fine. And their visual function is really terrible. And I think that that helps them at least to, you know, somebody's listening to me. Somebody understands what I'm saying to them. I may not be able to fix it all, but I at least say, yes, you're correct. You have a disease that explains all of these problems that you're experiencing. And another big factor we forget it a lot, but it's so important to emphasize because patients don't understand this, is that you're not going to go completely blind from this. You know, so many patients think if I've gotten this much worse in the last 2 years, you know, I'm going to wake up 5 days from now and the lights are going to be totally out. They really don't know that it does not make them lose all of their vision. So that's something we really do need to remember to emphasize. It's so simple, but it's so important.
All great points by Jessica. You know, as far as showing images to patients, I think it depends on the patient, right? Some patients, you could show them images. They don't know what they're looking at. They're not sure what they see. So it's not helpful in some patients. But certainly some patients will respond to, you know, a color photo or an OCT, especially if you could tell it's getting worse. But some patients will look at them like, what is that? Like Mars? Like, I have no idea what you're showing me. So not helping. You know, and I think when you talk to a patient, you know, I mean, I think they appreciate, you know, honesty, you know, that, you know, they have this condition and that you know, it can progress with time and there's things we can do. And I do talk to my patients about with any level of AMD about eating healthy, you know, not smoking, you know, those things can help slow down the progression. So you have to have those discussions with your patients, and you have to explain to them that they have a serious sight-threatening condition that you know, is likely to progress, and it doesn't progress the same in all patients. So we have to monitor you over a course of some time to see, you know, how you progress, and we will deal with it, you know, accordingly, according to how you progress.
Got it. Well, as we wrap up, you know, there's one last thing that I want us to repeat, because I know we've hit on some of these already, but I think that they're the biggest take homes. So first, you know, if anybody in the audience wants to hear a little bit more about the myths that we've busted, go back to the episode that we posted last month that really says that this Heidelberg Spectralis unit is modular and it can come to your practice at an entry level price if that's important to you. It delivers highest ability to give us high quality retinal scans, and it's easy to use. So when we have this technology at our fingertips and we're seeing and managing a patient with geographic atrophy, remind us again, what are some of the subtleties when looking at a high quality image that we should be looking for as, number one, signs of the disease state to begin with, and then two, indications that there's been progression?
So, you know, one thing to always keep in mind whenever you're looking at the OCT, thinking about what layers of this tissue are affected by what diseases. So when you're thinking of someone with AMD, you got to take your eyes and look specifically at, you know, these outer retinal layers. So you want to look at the RPE, you want to look at the photoreceptor lines, you want to look for these drusen type lesions, reticular pseudodrusen, Steve pointed out hypotransmission defects, which are going to be light that cascades down into the choroid. We also want to think about the choroid. Most patients with AMD tend to have thinner than average choroid. And there's a lot of suggestions that patients who have geographic atrophy that are high risk progression may have even thinner choroids. So choroidal thickness may play into how likely they are to progress even in their GA. So you want to be thinking specifically about those more outer retinal layers.
Jessica, I agree. Stephen, before you answer, Jessica, do you think it is the patients anatomically have a narrower choroid that predisposes them to GA, or do you think it's the disease state that somehow causes the GA layer, the choroid to change?
That's a good question. We know that we lose choroidal thickness to some degree over time, but with AMD, to some degree, it is a vascular disease, so you get this loss of the choroid capillaris probably, you know, at a faster rate than a normal person, and it's that ischemia that then, you know, leads to some of these cascades further down. So most likely it's not something from perhaps birth, but something that changes at a faster rate over time. I may be wrong about that, but
If you're wrong about it, I'm wrong too, because that's what I think too. I think that these patients have a thinner choroid, you know, less choroidal vasculature that starts the process why they would get geographic atrophy while another patient might not. Again, we might be wrong, but just like patients with thick choroids are more likely to have central serous retinopathy, right? Patients with thin choroids are probably more likely to have geographic atrophy. So I think you're probably right on that. But again, we could be wrong. The thing that I would say, you know, I agree with everything Jessica said about OCTs, but, you know, don't rush. You know, a lot of us just rush to look at the heat map or whatever you want to call it, you know, and green is good and red is bad. You know, you have to look a little bit deeper than that, because patients can have normal thickness but still have issues, right? They could still be losing the RPE layers and other layers. So, you know, you have to really spend a couple minutes. Don't just look, oh yeah, there's no edema, there's no swelling, there's no this. Especially when you start to think about geographic atrophy, you know, you have to look at the RPE, you have to look at, you know, the different levels for these subtle signs and for the health of the retina and that transmission defect. So, you know, you have to spend a little more time. The more stuff you need to look for, the little bit more time you have to spend looking for it, right?
Absolutely. All right, so any concluding advice you can give our audience members as we close out this topic on Heidelberg Spectralis technology and geographic atrophy?
You know, my best advice is just continue taking your scans, continue looking at these scans. Seeing some of these more subtle things is a learning curve. Whenever I think back to, you know, Chris mentioned this at the very beginning, think back about when you weren't as well adjusted to interpret these scans when you were a student, when I was a resident. You know, I was seeing these same things and I didn't notice them. And now I do. And it's because of seeing them over and over again, using images online to look at, going to lectures, and just really making a point that, hey, I want to be good at understanding this stuff. And it does take some work, but as you get better at it, you see so many things in these patients with AMD on the OCT scans that can help you, understand what's going on, understand why this particular patient's so symptomatic and this patient isn't, identify advanced stages of disease better, and ultimately serve your patients better.
Yeah. Well said. Everything. The only thing I would say is that, you know, when we didn't have treatments for certain diseases, it probably didn't really matter if we saw it or recognized it or counseled our patients about it, because It didn't really matter, you know, but now that we have more treatments, it's really important to start doing a better job diagnosing patients with diseases such as geographic atrophy. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Marvel movies. I think, Chris, I think you and I went to see an Avengers movie back in the day when we were in Dallas. I forget which one that was.
Yeah, I think it was Avengers Endgame.
Was it? Whichever it was, I loved them all. But I'm a big Marvel fan. And, you know, one of the Spider-Mans is an old quote, you know, with power comes great responsibility, right? With increased power comes great responsibility. And, you know, I think we have the power to diagnose things more and to get our patients better treatment. And it's really our responsibility to start doing this and to take better care of our patients, to recognize retinal disease, to send those off for treatment that need treatment. Because in the long run, it's going to benefit our patients with hopefully better vision for a longer period of time.
I love it. Thank you both for being fantastic guests. I'll undoubtedly invite you back for a future episode.
Class is ended for today, and we have no exams or grades approaching. Please email me at foureyedprofessor@gmail.com if there are topics that you would like to hear and see through a professor's eyes.